carry out, but God raises up adversaries or terrorists, and they turn him from what he had in his heart to do. It's amazing how God turns people from their objectives by events they can't control. So Daniel writes there, he said, he bore with fury. He goes toward the south to make war against the king out of the south. But when he gets down there and starts warring, tidings out of the north troubleth him. Great Lord, he has to turn away from the king of the south, and he rushes back to the king of the north. Well, God don't want him to destroy the king of the north. So he says, tidings out of the east trouble him. Oh, boy. It's amazing how God lets circumstances, events, things that you hear, things that rise that you don't have any control or had any foreknowledge of, makes you turn away from those objectives that you had your heart set upon. That's what God has to do to a lot of people, Christians, that won't listen to him perfectly. He has to let events turn them away from purposes that their heart set upon. And that's the way it is when the Antichrist will come. If you want to read something more about it, I'd just like to share this. I think it's very interesting. In the 70th chapter of Revelation about the Antichrist. Now this is really, I think, a wonderful revelation. Verses 16 and 17. And the 10 horns which thou sawest upon the beast, that's the Antichrist, these shall hate the whore, and shall make her desolate and naked. That's the world church, the whore. And shall eat her flesh and burn her with fire. For God hath put in their hearts to fulfill his will and to agree and give their kingdom unto the beast until the words of God shall be fulfilled. That's the Antichrist and those 10 kings that are in an alliance with him, that he raises the world's largest army in history under one command. That man will command the largest army. It'll be larger than Hitler's. It'll be larger than Russia's. It'll be larger than the United States Army has ever been. Those common market nations of Europe that will embrace the kingdom of the old Roman Empire, which will be the revived kingdom of Antichrist. And those 10 kings, 10 nations that will be behind him in this military alliance, God puts it in their hearts. It's already in the heart of the Antichrist now. He wants to cut off nations, not a few. But what does the Lord do? The Lord turns him from his purpose of military adventures in trying to conquer the world, and he turns him on a new objective through these 10 kings that hate the world church, which is a cosmopolitan group headed by the Roman Catholics and the Pope, made up of these dead Protestant churches, the Greek and Russian Orthodox, and perhaps the other religions like Muslims. They all going to get together sooner or later for a brief period of time. But God's going to put it in the heart of these 10 kings to get the Antichrist to go with them to burn religious Babylon, which is none other than the Vatican City. And there God turns him from a purpose that he is determined to accomplish, a goal, a motive that he's driven by. And these 10 kings are in a rage against Rome. So they get the Antichrist, who is the commander-in-chief, to go against that city, and they burn her with fire and eat her flesh. That means a complete destruction, like you find Nebuchadnezzar was used of God back in his day to consummate some of the judgments of God upon Israel, upon Tyre, and upon Egypt, and other nations that God sent him against. And I like now to consider Nebuchadnezzar as one of those that was been raised up by God's sovereignty. Now, when you talk about sovereignty, you're talking about an act of God that doesn't depend upon any promise, any covenant, or anybody's intervention or intercession. It means that he does it according to the pleasure of his own will. He just does it because he wants to do it. There is no other explanation for it. Sovereignty. God can do what he pleases. I'll have mercy on whom I will have mercy, and whom I will I harden. Now in Jeremiah the 25th chapter, the beginning here of the identification of this man as being chosen of God to fulfill a particular and peculiar mission during his lifetime. And you note here in Jeremiah 25, in verse 3, that from the 13th year of Josiah, the son of Amon, king of Judah, even unto this day, the 23rd year, the word of the Lord hath come unto me, and I've spoken unto you, rising early and speaking, but you have not hearkened. And said, I sent to you the prophets, rising early and sinning, but you incline not your ear. Therefore turn from your evil ways, and dwell in the land that God hath given your fathers, and go not after other gods to worship them, and provoke me to anger with the works of your hands. Verse 6, God says, I will do you no hurt. But you've not hearkened unto me, saith the Lord, that you might provoke me to anger with the works of your hands to your own hurt. Now God is fixing to put a hurt, a very sore judgment upon his people, to chasten them back in line to the obedience of his word. Now God always uses somebody. Now he's already got a fellow prepared, by the way. Now verse 8. Therefore thus saith the Lord of hosts, because ye have not hearkened to my words, here's what I'm going to do. Here's the fellow that's coming. Behold, I send and take all the families of the north, saith the Lord, and Nebuchadnezzar, or Rezer, the king of Babylon, my servant, and will bring them against this land and against the inhabitants thereof and all the nations round about, and will utterly destroy them and make them an astonishment and hissing and perpetual desolations, and I'll take from them the voice of mirth. Now, if you read Revelation 18, you'll find the Antichrist does the same thing to Babylon in retaliation for their persecution of God's people. All right? He says, I'll take the voice of mirth out of her, out of my way for my people. The voice of gladness, the voice of the bridegroom, the voice of the bride, the sound of the millstones. Millstones is not just somebody playing with rocks. Millstones were the recording instruments of all the real estate that God's people owned. They put it on a millstone, and that was the recording. God says, hey, I'm going to destroy your millstone so you won't even know who owns this land anymore. It's my land. You're not going to own it. I'm going to destroy the records of all your real estate holdings. All right? In the light of the candle, and the whole land shall be a desolation and an astonishment, and these nations shall serve the king of Babylon 70 years. 70 years. And over in the 29th chapter, by the way, we need to take note here that why God did that. In Jeremiah 29, in verse 10, for thus saith the Lord, that after 70 years be accomplished at Babylon, I will visit you and perform my good word toward you in causing you to return to this place after 70 years. God's going to bring them back again, and he's going to give that land a rest for those 70 years, and when he brings them back, then he's going to take that remnant and bless them again. Down the 27th chapter of Jeremiah, verse 6, God said, I've given all these lands into the hand of Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, my servant. And not only just the land and the people, but he says, a beast of the field have I given him also to serve him, and all nations shall serve him, and his son, and his son's son. There were three kings during that 70 years of captivity of God's people into bondage. They were ruled over by Nebuchadnezzar, his son, and his grandson, until the very time of his land come, and then many nations and great kings shall serve themselves of him. And then he goes on in verse 11. He said, but that nation that bring, see the nations that bring their neck under the yoke of the king of Babylon and serve him, those will I let remain still in their own land, saith the Lord, and they shall till it and dwell therein. But Israel rebelled under Zedekiah, and this Nebuchadnezzar came, bringing the judgments of God upon this land that God had predicted would come to pass here in this day, this declining day in which Jeremiah was the prophet and Zedekiah was the king.